This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to Talk Louisiana, originating from the Investar Tower in Baton Rouge. Robin Dow is producing your number, 877-217-5757. This is Mark Ballard's day to join us, and that will come in short order. But in studio is my friend Daryl Glasper, the former Metro Councilman, Democrat turned Republican, who follows matters near and far. And one of the matters that is big for our city and our area is this proposed new arena at LSU and how it affects downtown Baton Rouge, because certainly it would change the River Center. We had Charles Landry on this show not long ago, the attorney who is pushing this. And this is a story that was in The Advocate in March, as in 5 months ago. And it was written by two very good reporters, Laura Nicholson and Andrea Gallo, and it's starts this way. For more than two decades, Baton Rouge's elected officials and economic development counterparts have tried to make downtown the key destination for the city parish. They offered tax incentives to lure new hotels, championed venues for the arts and for science, and celebrated grand openings of grocery stores and apartment complexes. The city parish poured at least $30 million over the past decade into the Raising Cane's River Center. The improvements included replacing seating in 2023, renovating the theater in 2022, and putting taxpayer money into past winning bids and incentives to host the United States Bowling Congress and the Miss USA pageant. But city parish officials are now on the brink of going for a proposal. In fact, the Metro Council has basically already said yes for a new Baton Rouge arena to host concerts, LSU sporting events, and more that could shift traffic away from downtown. The proposal, which is spearheaded by the Tiger Athletic Foundation, and it says in this story 5 months ago, and to be determined, private developers has a catch for the River Center. It could no longer host live music and entertainment events with more than 3,500 attendees. Now, the Metro Council signed off on this, but it is something that has not set well with some people, including our guest, Daryl Glasper, and a couple of the council members, Shauna Banks and Daryl Hurst, have expressed concern, but it's one of those things that has gained steam and looks like it may be headed for the finish line. But Daryl, you say we ought to pause and refresh and find out what's going on. Do we know who the developers are?
No, look, let me tell you, it's not only just the LSU project that the city has done. Last night, the city decided that they were going to introduce ordinance to do build a hotel at the River Center. Okay, so and then to going down the road a little bit, I'm hearing that they're going to do something with Memorial Stadium. Now, look, let me tell you this: you have elected officials that are elected, and I'm going to say that I can sit here and say you can't fault the developers, the people who are behind these projects, because they're very smart people. These are not dumb people. And if you can go to a government and get a non-compete, now, the River Center seats 10,000 individuals. And they're saying now that you can't not have a crowd over 3,000. So where's that revenue going? Look, Jim, let me say this. As a former elected official, I understand one thing, that in the past, they have given TIFs to hotels downtown that did not meet the expectations of the revenue that they thought they were going to get. So what happened? They come back to the city parish government. Same guys that made the decision, men and women made the decision, and the same administration, and they said, okay, good, we didn't meet what we supposed to meet. Can you extend our TIF another 10 years? So what I'm saying, and it is this, it's not just the LSU transaction. LSU got a good deal. Those guys were very, very smart. Now, can LSU put it together? That's the million-dollar question, because it's a $400 million project. Now, in a $400 million project, and I'm not a mm-hmm. genius, but you, the debt service that you have to net somewhere between 2.6, maybe 3 million a month, the debt service that. So LSU's got some tasks ahead of them. You know, I think they're very smart out at LSU. You know, in order to do that, you're going to have to give away a lot of concessions. You're probably to give away your parking. You're going to give away your concession. You're going to give away your advertising and that type of thing. Now, look at the advertising at the River Center. Raising Cane's, I think, was giving them $250,000. One thing I did do in the last week or two is go
$250,000
for naming rights, the River Center.
That's all.
I think it was $250,000. I don't know. I just received a budget. What I did in the last 2 weeks, and let me tell you why I got involved in all of this. This is very important for the public to know. I was asked to look at the East Baton Rouge Parish Jail and had an opportunity to visit it. I could not finish my visit. Now, look, I think I'm a pretty good, strong guy, but to see human beings sleeping on floors and see the type of things that are going on in that prison, it's almost like a third world country. I said, look.
So how is that analogous to new arena?
Well, hold on just a second. Let me tell you why. Because the most important thing is getting money out of this budget to do what is necessary to do for the taxpayers instead of an arena, dealing with concerts, or a hotel. What is more important?
A jail.
You have to be, because you face with
a library.
Hold up.
At LSU.
Schools. And I'm not, listen to me.
But can't you have both?
No.
Hold on.
Let me tell you why you can't have both. Because you have a budget of $734 million. That money belongs to the taxpayers. Okay? It belongs to the taxpayers. Now, I believe in economic development. I'm a business person. But what comes first? Are you going to take the taxpayers' money and put it at risk? Because you have to look at the language in these documents. No one has seen the language in the documents. You know, the public, when you talk to the public, when I've spoken to people that I know that's intelligent, you know what they say? That's a bad deal for the city, great deal for LSU. And then now you're going to embark upon another major project at building a hotel. Why are you in the hotel business? You should be taking, you can't take care of your streets, you can't take care of your crime, you don't have houses.
We have close to 10 hotels downtown already. So, who would be involved with a hotel?
Well, that's $1 million question.
Well, you've got $2 million questions, probably multi-million dollar questions. But now, a lot of these ideas actually, I think, may have merit. But we don't know who the developers are. We're really in a bad spot as far as discerning who's involved, who makes money, and who pays the freight.
I want to say this. Every project that a developer brings to you have merit. But it has merit to who? It has merit to the developer. But does it have merit to the taxpayers? Look, Jim, I've always been a very straight guy, and I've never sanitized it. Look, I have friends, and sometimes you make people mad. Well, you have to get mad. Let me tell you why you get mad. You're looking at a man right in front of you that went to this administration and said, you need a jail. I'm going to make a few phone calls, and let's see if we can raise, let's say it's $300 million. Let's see if we can raise $300 million for some very bright people around the country. And we look at your budget, okay? We'll look at your budget and see where the funds are in your budget to debt service this.
Okay.
And instead of focusing on concerts and on hotels, let's focus on this problem.
You're comparing something that is in a way unrelated, but I hear what you say. There are only so many dollars to go around, and the Memorial Stadium, we had a listener, and we will go to the phone lines in a moment, 877-217-5757. This Memorial Stadium thing sounds great to me. The site could add 110,000 square foot facility and some pro teams. What's wrong with that?
Let me say this to you. We have an arena at LSU where you have basketball games. You don't feel your own arena up down there right now. Okay? So all of these great grand ideas, who's going to pay for it? If it fails, and the developer is going to take the brunt of it, that's fine.
Okay, but I think Charles Landry has stated more than once and on this show that the LSU deal will cost taxpayers nothing, but all these peripheral things you're saying will cost taxpayers.
Exactly.
Do I have it right?
Exactly. What are you giving up to the developer? Now, more than anything else, will the funds stay in the city? Okay, or will the funds go to the developer? He's going to have to.
But if they build a nice $400 million arena, that's going to stay in the city. And before we go to Doug on I-10, one of our favorite callers, a listener says, I saw the story too, that there's speculation that the LSU golf course will be used as the site. Is that something that you have been able to look into?
Well, let me say this to you. You know, and I'm not a developer, but I think I have common sense. The infrastructure cost to take and destroy the golf course and to build an arena on that doesn't
Well, there are other places available on campus, and I don't know that that's a given, but I could see why they would want it in a place where it would stand out.
Well, let me say, so you had the baseball field across the street, but let me say this to you. If you put it on the ag area, this is my opinion now, okay? If you put it on the ag area, it's all flat. You don't have to cut all the trees. You don't have to cover up the ditches. You don't have to do all of the infrastructure work. Mm-hmm. That infrastructure work can cost you a lot of money. Plus, you landlock right there at the railroad. The baseball field is right there. But, Jim, let me tell you something. What I want to focus on, and this is what I want the public to focus on, you need to start asking the tough questions. How is your dollars being spent?
All right, we'll come back with Daryl Glasper and go to Doug on I-10 after this 89.3 second timeout. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757 is your number. A few more minutes with Daryl Glasper, and then it's Mark Ballard. Doug on I-10. Doug, good morning. Thanks for joining us on Talk Louisiana. Doug, are you there? Robin, do we have him unlocked?
Sorry, I was muted. Good
there
morning.
You go. Go ahead.
Yes. I want to thank your guest for raising all these questions and trying to stand up for the community, because the public's at a tremendous disadvantage when it comes to trying to understand these issues. But if you take what he's talking about and you combine it with the history of how the parish has allowed the development of high-risk flood zones, which have put many more people at risk from flooding, and now the taxpayers are funding mitigation efforts to try to correct that, which is necessary now to try to protect them. The total costs now are at least $3 billion, most of it to the federal taxpayer, but not all of it. So when I hear all this, I think of two words that describe the situation. That's institutionalized corruption. Thanks.
All right. Thank you, Doug. You want to bite on that, Daryl? No, you were on the Metro Council for many years.
Yes, I was on it for
many. But I don't think any of these council people are on the take.
No. Listen to me, Jim. Let me say this to you. Smart people will go in and to a politician, and they're looking at $374 million. They'll go in and they'll bring all these grandiose ideas, but at the end of the day, the politician is the reason why I'm bringing this up is I'm laying the blame right at the foot of the politicians right now. You are allowing these taxing districts or development districts, tax-free districts, mm-hmm. and the money is not going to the tax, but they're not going to the taxpayers in the general fund. It's going to the developers to pay for these projects. And if they fail, what language protects the taxpayer for taking the brunt of the failed transaction?
Listener Hobie writes that Raising Cane's paid $3.87 million for the naming rights. And I don't imagine Todd Graves, who is the richest person in the state of Louisiana, is real enthused about seeing this Raising Cane's River Center being reduced in capacity as far as the number of people who can attend events. And it is a beautiful thing. And by the way, I think the LSU deal has merit. But why can't they do both? For years, we had the Centralplex and the LSU Assembly Center getting big name events.
What I'm gonna say is to you, I thought it was $250 a year. I don't know if it was $3.6 million. That's not a year.
$3.87 million.
Not a year.
For 10 years.
Oh, for 10 years. See, that's what I'm talking about.
For 10 years.
So the naming rights, they're gonna lose that, because guess what? I don't think that Todd Graves or any good businessman is gonna allow an arena with 3,500 people to go in and give them the same kind
of
money.
His name might be on the LSU arena.
It may be on the LSU arena. So what I'm saying to you is this, Jim, is that we have to hold now accountable the people that's making these bad decisions with other people's money.
Well, I think these people need to come forward and show what they got. And when they don't name the developers, and this was 5 months ago when Laura and Andrea did their story for The Advocate, and at that time it was thought the developers would be named soon, well...
But not just that. They need to explain what's going to happen with the Centralplex. Why are you going to get into the hotel business?
Also, a listener notes, and this has come up before, Daryl, about student fees. Will student fees be involved in this? Supposedly no taxpayer money, but I'd like to know that. Fees built that $85 million rec center out there.
Look, I used to always say the devil's in the details. And if you're not reading the details and you're not, you don't understand the nuances of how these funds are going to flow and what the language in these documents and these agreements say, then that can become problematic. It's problematic when I see, not in the south of LSU, where I grew up, I see there's no attention to that. Okay, there's no attention to it. What plan do you have for revitalization in the inner city?
Well, there are some of those areas, and I live pretty close to there, that have been gentrified, but there are others, as you know, that look like, it looks like a third world country. But I know your heart's in the right place, and you follow what's going on. I think you know more about what's going on in this city than I do, but right now, transparency would be very helpful. Paul in Opelousas. Paul, quickly, you're on with Daryl.
Good morning, Jim, and good morning, Daryl. Jim, you stole my question. I think Baton Rouge, East and West Parish, is big enough to support two facilities like that. I do promotions, too, and have done several festivals and events. $3,000, then the cost of the River Center needs to compensate down for the limited admission gates that you can let in the place. I think Baton Rouge is big enough for both events to have full capacity. And what do you think about that?
Thank Darryl?
Well, I'm going to say this. The taxpayers have put $30 million into something that they just gave away, and they signed a non-compete. That's already signed, and it was signed off by the city council. I think it was a bad deal for the taxpayers and a great deal for LSU. So I'm not saying anything bad about LSU. If you can outsmart politicians, what they could never do with me, and they're not doing it to Darryl Hurst. I'm going to tell you right now, I don't know the man very, very personally. I've spoken to him a few times in the last week, have never talked to him before. But at least I know one thing. They're not outsmarting him, okay? He's asking the right questions because at the end of the day, it is the ones who are sanctioning these events is the administration and the Metro Council.
All right. Well, Daryl, we'll follow it with you, and hopefully we'll have some others who are on, quote, the other side. Charles Landry was kind enough to be with us a few months ago, and perhaps he will return. I'd love to get his review on what's happening since we last spoke. But I saw you, and I think my eyesight's still good. I saw you at the Stanford trial. What were you doing there? Well, were you one of the victims?
Well, this is what I can say. I can say that Phil Price did a phenomenal job, him and his daughter, and that I was mystified about the results that the jury handed down. And I predicted that it wouldn't take very long because they had suffered COVID. They had been there for three weeks, and it was on a Friday. But let me tell you three things I want to say very quickly. In April 2004, Commissioner Travis determined that the CDs that was purchased through Stanford was unsafe and unsound.
And Phil Price said that on this show. So it's a case in which he made a good case. I think people who were there said he did an outstanding job, but Michael Victorian did an outstanding job on the other side.
Look, they were pros, but there was the evidence was overwhelming. And the jury just, I don't think they got it.
Well, that sometimes happens, but of course, you were rooting for Phil, too.
Well, I was rooting for what was right.
I think Phil made a persuasive case, but the jury of his peers, of our peers, decided the other way. And same way in the Sharon Lewis trial. That trial had been in New Orleans. I think the outcome would have been different. But you go with what you got. And in Baton Rouge, it's hard to fight the big institutions. In this case, the state of Louisiana and LSU. And they both sides made good cases, made good presentations, but they lost. And they lost quickly. I mean, the jury was out and back, and boom, it's over. See ya, out of here. Good night.
It was a decision that I didn't agree with, but you have to respect it. But
there is an appeals process.
Well, yeah, the evidence is overwhelming. When Whitney Bank decided in 2004 that they were no longer being a part of it, that was the other smoking gun. So, look, let's just see what the outcome going to be. But I think the taxpayers should be really thank you for the opportunity that you give them to hear both sides of all these stories.
Well, thank you. And, well, there are usually about 14 sides, but I want to know more. And the Advocate's done a good job covering it, but some in-depth analysis of this deal that is apparently going to happen, building a new arena at LSU at the expense of the River Center, is worth worth the Andrea Gallo and Laura Nicholson treatment. So thank you, sir.
All right, thank you so
much. Mark Ballard is with us. We're about to go to a break, but we are 81 days before an election. And just 25 days ago, Joe Biden got out of the race. 25 short days ago. And at that time, that Monday after, the Real Clear Politics survey of odds on winning, this is not margin of victory, but odds of winning, it was Trump 60, Harris 30. Today, Harris is 9 points in front of Donald Trump. So what happened? We'll talk about it with Mark Ballard and whether this is something, you know, what goes up must come down. Spinning wheel got to go around. I think Blood, Sweat, and Tears did that in 1969. Is Kamala Harris going to come back to the pack, or is she soaring away? We'll talk about it. We look forward to hearing from you, Mark Ballard, at the ready. And your number is 877-217-5757. More Talk Louisiana after this timeout. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana. One of our faves, he joins us almost every week, Mark Ballard, covering politics now in the Beltway. And for many years, he was at the Capitol in Baton Rouge, now at the nation's capital. And as I mentioned, the worm has turned in the presidential race. Now, things can happen, and we're 81 days away. And I'm sure Donald Trump will have ample ammunition. He will pound away against Kamala Harris on issues like immigration and the economy, although yesterday's economic report was very good. But we'll see what happens. But right now, he's gone from a 30-point favorability as far as him winning, 60 to 30, 24 days ago, to now it's 53.7 Harris and 44.8 Trump. So that's 8.9%. She is, it appears, gaining ground every day. But this is a country in which the Electoral College determines the presidency. And right now, according to Nate Silver and all the others, Trump has 219 electoral votes all but wrapped up, and that includes Louisiana's 8. And Harris has 208 all but wrapped up. It takes 270 to win. And so that's why those states of Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin are so important. Those are the three states Hillary Clinton lost by an eyelash, and she needed all three to win, and she lost all three very closely. But if Harris wins those and keeps the other states Hillary Clinton won, she will win independent of what happens in Arizona, Nevada, Georgia, North Carolina, Florida. It doesn't matter. Those three states are where the action is, and that's where the money will be and where the attention will be. Candidates will spend a lot more time in Milwaukee than they will in New York, Chicago, or Los Angeles. And Mark Ballard, it is an amazing turn of events, isn't it?
Yeah, it's kind of a political whiplash that we've had. July was perhaps one of my busiest months since I've been up in D.C. because of, we went from, Trump surely to win. I mean, and that was easy to say. And then President Biden drops out, and basically Kamala Harris has kind of energized the Democratic Party, at least those, the young people and African Americans and Hispanics and Asian Americans who had not been that excited about Joe Biden. In fact, I think what your polls will also show you is that that Democrats and Republicans had higher negatives about going into this race, than they did positives, meaning that more people were against Trump, more people were against Biden than were for Biden or for Trump. And that dynamic changed when Biden stepped down. And now we're going to see next week. Most people don't really know who Kamala Harris is, and the Republicans have been trying to define her as the immigration czar. She's not. Trying to define the Democrats as causing this horrific economy that's destroying American families. It's not. And they're going to be switching, I think, from, personal attacks on the vice president, personal attacks on on Governor Walz and aiming more at policies. And we're going to start seeing that today from the Democratic campaign. We'll be in Prince George's County talking about it. And at the same time that the President Trump is going to be doing a press conference in Florida, and then he's going to move into his kind of economic policies, and I think that we'll see a shift.
Well, he had great coverage of his first press conference since Harris became the presumptive Democratic nominee, and I suspect the media will cover this to some extent today, as they should, but if it goes an hour and a half, you got to wonder whether they should stay that long. Former President Trump often puts his foot in his mouth, and recently in one of these meetings with reporters, he told a story about a helicopter incident, which now appears to have never happened, at least not in the way he stated, and not with Willie Brown, the former mayor of San Francisco. He said, "I know Willie Brown very well. In fact, I went down in a helicopter with him. We thought maybe this is the end." Well, Willie Brown, who grew up just a few miles from the Louisiana border in Texas before heading out to San Francisco and conquering the Golden State, who now is over 90 years old and almost blind, I hear, he went on television. He still looks great. He always was the most dapper dresser in politics. He got his suits from someone like Manuel Martinez. He said he changed suits, by the way, four times a day back in his prime. But here he is, and he's usually a quite loquacious fellow. But here he is on CNN responding to the story about him being in a helicopter crash with Donald Trump.
Mayor Brown, thank you so much for being with us this evening. Just to clear things up, have you ever been in a helicopter that made an emergency landing with Donald Trump?
No.
Have you ever been in a helicopter with Donald Trump?
No.
He is apparently tonight getting angry about all of this, calling the New York Times and berating them for their story on this, claiming, he says, we have the flight records of the helicopter, and apparently said the helicopter landed in a field. You have no memory of anything like that ever happening?
No.
Mark, Donald Trump can tell a story.
Yeah. And it sounds like that he's pretty emphatic. It's not, you know, I don't recall. It's no. So, well, that's a problem with the former president is he tells a good story. Sometimes the facts are not in line, and that's going to come back to bite him in a presidential contest, particularly one where the candidates are not afraid to go after him, as they had been in the past, or if not calling him on his stories.
877-217-5757. And Foster Campbell has commented that he knows Willie Brown. And after all, believe it or not, they're not that. Brown grew up right across the border in Texas, and Campbell, who is several years younger, grew up in Elm Grove. So same neck of the woods. You got, and he was noting, got Bill Clinton from Hope, Mike Huckabee from Hope, and Ross Perot from Texarkana. That little corridor has produced a lot of major politicos. A listener asked a good question about Harris. Now, I'm looking at the Real Clear Politics average here, and right now, on a generic battle for the U.S. Senate, Democrats have a 46.4% lead, 46.4% to 45.9% for Republicans, just a 0.5% margin of difference. But when it comes to the actual U.S. Senate, the way they have it, the GOP right now, according to Real Clear Politics, has 50 seats locked up. Democrats have 43, and there's 7 toss-ups. So it does appear that it is quite likely, Mark, that the U.S. Senate will be in Republican control if Kamala Harris wins the election.
Yeah, I think that's pretty likely. I know that a lot of Democrats now, because of her popularity over the last month or so, and the boom in energy that has been put into the campaigns, are kind of hoping for a hat trick. But the numbers are just not there. basically you're looking at probably Montana and Ohio, both of which have Democratic senators on the ballot. And they are very strong Republican states, and they have strong Republican candidates in those states. On the other hand, you have to look at Texas and Florida, which I know, you know, are Republican red states, but Rick Scott in Florida and Ted Cruz in Texas are running, I mean, neck and neck with their Democratic opponents, and in both of those states are just a little bit of they're close to being purple, in that if the cities in those states, the very large cities in those states turn out and the rural areas do not, then you could see a Democratic senator in Texas or Florida. But right now the numbers look like with Joe Manchin in West Virginia stepping down and the Republicans sure to win that seat, that just one other seat, and that is probably Montana or Ohio. If they win, then the Republicans will take care of the Senate.
And that's why if it was 50-50, and Democrats still have a chance in those two states. Tester believes he's going to win, and he's done it before in Montana, but that would mean
Sherrod Brown does too.
Yeah, and Sherrod Brown, of course, yeah. I wouldn't bet against Sherrod Brown in Ohio, but that means they got to sweep the table and win all seven of those toss-up seats. But they could do that, and if they did, that would mean that whoever the president is, the vice president would cast the deciding vote, and that's why the presidential election has great relevance to what happens in the U.S. Senate. Jason in Jones Creek. Jason, you're on with Mark. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys. I just wanted to ask Mark if he knew the status on the former President Trump's account or campaign being hacked. It seemed to have disappeared from the headlines as quickly as it popped up.
Mark?
Yeah, it did kind of come up. In large part, it dropped out because they didn't. Nobody actually published. It was a report that had been done on J.D. Vance prior to the former president choosing him as the running mate. And basically, because it was hacked, unlike what happened 4 years ago, or well, I guess now 8 years ago, with Hillary Clinton's emails, nobody picked them up and decided, you know, we're not going to run this because, you know, it was sort of stolen. And so that I think that's why it's kind of dropped out of the news cycle. They're moving on to other things.
877-217-5757. A few more minutes with the erudite Mark Ballard in Washington after this timeout. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana. Robin Dow is producing A Few More Minutes with Mark Ballard. And then we go to Faith Jenkins, a real Louisiana success story. And Mark is here surveying the landscape 81 days before November 5th. The election of 2024 is now inside 12 weeks. David in Atlanta, please be concise. David, you're on with Mark.
Good morning. In the Washington Post or the New York Times today, Trump is now proposing as much as a 20% minimum tariff on all imported goods. Quote, Trump said, those countries that have been ripping us off are now going to pay, unquote. Trump doesn't know a thing about trade.
All right, well, tariffs... And the former president has stated that China pays when we put on tariffs. But in reality, Mark, the consumers pay.
Yeah, I guess. I'm not an economist, so I'll take your word for that. I mean, it is it is usually passed down to the consumers, these kind of additional prices. But that seems to be it's not just China. It's the 20% tariff is going to be on everything imported.
Right. That's what he wants.
But he's also looking at, he wants to re-up his tax cuts from that had not been re-upped by Congress. He wants to do away with the Inflation Reduction Act and the monies that come out of that. Those are part of his programs too, and he argues that that'll stimulate the economy.
That's what he says. But this used to be anathema to a Republican to be calling for tariffs. But Donald Trump has changed the book. And Democrats, of course, used to be accused of being dubs, but it's Trump who says he could end the war in Ukraine in 24 hours. And I think, Mark, we have a pretty good idea on how he would go about trying to do that.
Well, I don't know how he would go about trying to do that, but apparently he thinks that by going all in with Israel, that would be one way to take care of the Gaza war.
Yeah,
and there is a big argument as to whether Israel should end the Palestinian threat once and for all. That's on the one side, and on the other side, saying well, there's a whole lot of civilians who don't have their problems with Israel, and they're getting killed because of the attacks on the Hamas politicians. So that's where we're at.
Well, thank you, Mark. We will talk next week, I hope, and please be safe and keep going. You inspire us with your work. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
And we're joined now by Faith Elizabeth Jenkins. She is an American attorney from Louisiana Tech and Southern University, nationally known now, and she is also a legal analyst on MSNBC. Was the presiding judge over the long-running courtroom series Divorce Court from 2020 to 2022. And she is involved in an endeavor that I think is an interesting topic, and we'll start there. Killer Relationship with Faith Jenkins on NBC's True Crime Network Oxygen. And Faith, by the way, was Miss Louisiana 2000. She competed in the Miss America competition in 2001, and she knows this state pretty well. And she's married to the great singer Kenny Lattimore, so quite a life for this lady who is still in her prime. She'll be in her prime a long time, but she's much younger than I am, so her prime will be probably a couple more decades than mine. But good morning to you, Faith.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me, Jim. I appreciate that introduction.
Well, it's good to talk with this graduate of C.E. Byrd High School in Shreveport, the school that produced former LSU quarterback David Woodley. And tell us about this concept, killer relationship with Faith Jenkins. This is something that involves things that are not so pleasant for a person who is very pleasant, but I want to know more.
Well, just by way of background, Jim, when I left, when I graduated from school in Louisiana, I moved to New York and I started working as a criminal prosecutor in the Manhattan DA's office. And in hosting the court shows that you mentioned,
Okay, hold on, Faith. You're breaking up. I'm going to get Robin to call you back because this is, if I'm having trouble hearing you, I know our listeners are. So let's see if we can get you to a better place, because you got such a compelling story. I want to know more from Faith Jenkins, who, as mentioned, has her BA from Louisiana Tech and her JD from Southern University right here in Baton Rouge, and she is involved in this new series. It's relatively new, but Killer Relationship with Faith Jenkins on NBC's True Crime Network, Oxygen. It examines murder cases that began with romantic relationships or close friendships that went awry, and I think we could say went awry in a tragic way. So she, as noted, has been around the block in some major places involving the world of television, and she's conquered that world with great zeal and success. And it's done this being married to Kenny Lattimore. They have a daughter who was born last year on Muhammad Ali's birthday. And Skylar Lee Lattimore turned one on January 17th. So Robin's doing her best to get Faith to a place where we can hear her melodious voice. But these kinds of shows have taken a life of their own, and Faith has been active in many places, including Fox and Friends, The O'Reilly Factor, Hannity, a lot of times on Fox. She's been on with Al Sharpton on MSNBC. And she, remember Lou Dobbs, who died a few weeks ago? She was a frequent guest of him, and Neil Cavuto. So people know her around the country, and I am pleased that we have her in a better spot. Back to you, Faith. I was tap dancing a bit, but you were in the middle of telling us about killer relationship with Faith Jenkins and examines murder cases that began with romantic relationships. Tell us more.
Yes. Well, so when I left Louisiana and I moved to New York, I became a criminal prosecutor and I handled a lot of domestic violence cases. And then when I started doing court TV, Judge Faith and Divorce Court, the bread and butter of the shows were really about relationships. So combining that experience with this show, A Killer Relationship, it's really about what happens when relationships that are supposed to be built on love and trust start out so great and they end so badly. And we examine the why and we really get inside of the criminal mind. That's our goal, to get in the criminal mind and see why people make the decisions that they make.
Well, as I mentioned, you have a long career doing lots of things on television. This is something that, as we know, America's captivated by true crime. But do you like it?
Well, I think it's very relatable. I think people are captivated because we can all relate to having a relationship in our lives. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to even be a significant other. It could be a family, a friend. And I think we can all relate to having a relationship that doesn't work out for one reason or another. Why can't people walk away? Why can't people just leave those relationships? Why do some people feel that they can't walk away, that someone's life has to end? And so what I like about it is examining the why, going into the level of investigation in these cases. And also, you know, we don't do any cases where we don't have the blessing from the family of the victim. And also, really, what's most important to me is letting people know that this victim, their legacy is not their murder. It's not about why they died. It's about how they lived. So that's why you see so many family members and friends on the show talking about this person and talking about the relationship that they had that turned out to be a killer relationship.
Now, you worked in New York City as a prosecutor in the DA's office. That office, of course, has gained worldwide attention of late. And a listener asks a legitimate question, the claims that that office is politicized. Do you buy that?
I will tell you, when I started at that office, I was under DA Morgenthau, who's our longtime DA for over two decades. And when I got the job in the office, he told me that I had one job and one job only, and that was to do justice in my cases. And they hired me because they thought that I had the judgment to make good decisions when it came to these cases. A prosecutor's position is a very powerful position. In many ways, you have more power than even a judge in terms of recommending what happens with your case prior to that case going to trial. So I will say, in my experience when I was there, that was my job, and I was very passionate about it, just doing the right thing with the cases that came before me and on my desk. And I think that's what makes a good prosecutor, someone who is not making decisions based on their personal politics, but what they think is best for the case, what is justice for the victim, what is justice for the family, and what is justice for the community to help keep our community safe.
Well, the series is Killer Relationship with Faith Jenkins on Oxygen. And a listener, we only have about 20, 30 seconds at the most, but the Miss America, this is Holly in the Garden District. She says you were the first runner up. Is that correct? You almost won it.
That is correct. I was very close.
Was that a good experience? Or was it? Well, go ahead.
It was a good experience. I will always say it was. I would not be where I am today had it not been for that experience, because it took, you know, a young 23-year-old Faith and.
Well, it made her a big star, and we hope we'll talk with her again. Back tomorrow. Stay tuned.